screaming out her name, most likely in efforts to make sure people knew and could hear that something was happening to them.
Bayan alleges that the gunman worked for the government. They waged a successful online petition on Facebook and Twitter that they said led to Rojas's release on Sunday.
It proves that us here advocating can make a difference.
Part in the International Solidarity Mission 4 years ago. It investigated the disappearance and murders of more than 800 activists, farmers, lawyers, and religious leaders allegedly committed by government forces. These days, Arturo Garcia, with the LA-based Alliance for a Just and Lasting Peace in the Philippines, says Arroyo is silencing her detractors under the guise of fighting terror.
So everybody's a target. Those who oppose Arroyo will be picked up, summarily executed, or being detained.
Human rights activists say the situation is likely to worsen as the U.S.-backed Arroyo administration seeks to consolidate its power by changing the nation's constitution so that it has a perpetual regime. Hilo says U.S. residents should demand that the Obama administration withdraw any funding that U.S. taxpayers are giving to the Philippines and the military. Bayan will be holding rallies today in four U.S. cities on behalf of all victims of political violence. For FSRN, I'm Leilani Albano in Los Angeles.
You've been listening to FSRN, which is supported by Pacifica Radio, community radio affiliate stations, and listener supporters. We're online at fsrn.org, and you can follow us at twitter.com/FSRN. Today's newscast was produced by Vinod K. Joes and Puck Lowe. She's sitting in for Catherine Comp. Our Washington, D.C. editor is Leanne Caldwell. Our headlines editors are Nell Abram and Jess Burns. Our tech team at KPFA in Berkeley today includes Rose Katapchi and Oscar Hernandez. From Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles, I'm Aura Bogado.
On Thursday, May 28th, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m., KBOO will co-sponsor the Palestinian Via Dolorosa, Journey of Suffering, at Portland State University, Smith Memorial Hall, Room 101. The event will include Palestinian food and olive oil tasting, Palestinian arts and crafts, and a photo exhibit representing the Palestinian journey of suffering from the 1948 Nakba to the present. That's Thursday, May 28th, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at Portland State University, the Palestinian Via Dolorosa.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the 3rd Portland Queer Documentary Film Festival, May 28th through the 31st at Clinton Street Theater. The festival will bring stories from around the globe, including the West Bank and New Zealand. The U.S. documentaries highlight a range of issues that affect queer communities. That's QDoc, the Queer Documentary Film Festival, May 28th through the 31st at Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton in Portland. More information is available on their website at queerdocfest.org or by email, info@queerdocfest.org.
Taxes got you down? Get a head start on next year's taxes by donating your unwanted vehicle to KBOO. We'll use the vehicle to raise funds for the great programs you listen to every day, and you'll get a tax receipt for your donation. Put your unwanted vehicle in good hands by calling the vehicle donation line at 877-KBOO-123. To donate your vehicle, that's 877-KBOO-123.
I was never cool in school. I'm sure you don't remember me.
And now it's been 10 years, I'm still wondering who to be.
And I'd love to mix in circles, clicks, and social coteries. That's me. Hand me my nose ring.
Can we be happy?
Show me the mosh pit.
Can we be happy?
Hi, you're listening to the KBOO Youth Collective Underground. It is 6:04, and it is 90.7
FM. Portland.
Yeah. Okay, and
the theme for this month is
superheroes. And since 2004, Gerald Lester of Portland, Oregon, has been sharing his love of the outdoors with children who may or may not have ever had an opportunity to truly explore nature before. Katrina, Zoe, and Kim of the KBOO Youth Collective got a chance to check in with Gerald and see what trips his Portland-based organization, Great Outdoors Academy, has planned for this year.
Hi, I'm Katrina, and I'm here with Gerard, and he's going to tell us about his organization a little bit.
Well, hi, Katrina. I'm Gerard Lester. I'm the executive director for Great Outdoors Academy, and we're a nonprofit organization here in the Portland area. We do wilderness programs with young people, and the unique aspect that we add to that is creative expression in writing, photography, and illustration.
What role do you play on these expeditions?
Well, besides being the executive director, I also am a guide on most of the expeditions that we do. We do programs around the school year with a lot of alternative schools here in the Portland area, and then we do lengthier expeditions during the summer that can be anywhere from 4 days to a week long.
What do you do on these outings exactly?
The work that we do in the wilderness with young people is we work with a lot of people who haven't been camping before. We introduce them to a very positive experience in a wilderness setting. We may be backpacking or canoeing. We're doing a bicycle trip this summer. So there's a lot of fun. You're working in a group environment. It's a little bit different than going to a summer camp because you're actually joining an expedition team. And you live with these people. You cook with them, you eat with them, and you go on fantastic adventures.
Where are some of these places you go for your adventures?
We've done programs in Oregon, in Washington, and in Utah. In Utah, we've been down in the desert, down in the Arches National Park area and the La Salle Mountains area. We've been up at Olympic National Park in Washington for the last 2 years now, and this will be our third year there. We've done programs on the Oregon coast and in the Cascade Mountains in the Three Sisters Wilderness area. So we cover a wide range of places to go and things to do, and they're usually very inaccessible. We have gone deep into the wilderness, but we also do more front country programs.
Where are you going this year?
We're currently recruiting for three really exciting trips. We're going to be on the Willamette River doing a canoe program. We'll be up in the Olympic National Park on the coastal section in a fantastic wilderness area. It's one of the most remote places in the lower 48. And then at the end of the summer, in mid-August, we're going to be up in the San Juan Islands doing our very first bicycling trip.
Fantastic. When are you going on these trips?
As soon as school gets out. Mid-June, June 15th through 18th is our canoe trip. We'll be taking a break in July to do some other things. And then early August, August 1st through 8th, we'll be up in the Olympic coast. And the 17th through the 21st, we'll be in San Juan Islands.
Okay, and you said that this is when school gets out, so who can apply for these expeditions?
Typically, the expedition team members are 14 through 18-year-olds, so they're high school students. We've had high school graduates, though, and we've also had a few younger people. It really matters that they're ready to commit to being on an expedition and working with a team. There's also no experience required. You will learn safely and in a fun way how to do the activities that we're doing.
Awesome. And how many people for each expedition?
Expedition teams are usually made up of 8 young people and 2 old people, I guess, like myself.
For those of you just tuning in, we're having an interview with Gerard Lester with the Great Outdoors Academy. What's the deadline to apply for these summer expeditions?
For our summer expeditions, June 5th, so it's coming up fast.
What do you need to bring if you go on one of these trips?
It depends on the activity. We have a lot of things to loan. We don't want people to have to go out and buy a bunch of things. When I started my life of adventure, I guess you'd say, I just borrowed as many things as I could, and I think that's the best route to go, is to borrow from friends and family if you need a backpack or a sleeping bag or good walking shoes.
What are you not to bring?
Well, now this is kind of a controversial thing with some people who come on our trips, in that we leave cell phones and MP3 players behind. Consider it a vacation from technology. Now, I see you're making a face over there, Zoe, and you know, I get that a lot from young people. Let me tell you, something really interesting happens to the young people that come on the expeditions with us. And then when they spend, you know, 4 days to a week without the telephone, without the MP3 player, they start to hear other things. They start to listen to the waves. They listen to the wind. They listen to the animals. And they realize that they never really missed it that much. They started to talk to people more. They interacted with people face to face. And that's something that doesn't happen all the time in our world.
So what is the food like?
The food is delicious because I hate bad food. A lot of people, when they're on lengthy adventures or expeditions, they like freeze-dried packaged food. I can only take so much of that. The food is delicious. Actually, we also accommodate people who are vegetarians and even vegan. We're very conscientious about that. Good food makes a very good adventure, in my opinion.
Why are you offering this program?
It's really important to me to give back to young people who may not have an opportunity to get outdoors. So I work with a lot of people who've never been camping before, take them on their first camping trip, and they want more. And so we do these programs in the wilderness that combine fantastic adventure with the reflection that comes with writing and photography and illustration. When they publish their work in our journal, the Expedition Journal, that adventure is shared with many more people who read the journal. And it's much more of an impact than just an individual going on the trip. So it's really important to me that more people appreciate the natural world.
How can people reach you if they're interested in this program?
The best way is go to our website, greatoutdoorsacademy.org. There you can look at our magazine, you can see our blog, you can find ways to reach me. I'm available by phone most of the time, 503-281-3867. It's a great way to reach me.
Thank you. And with the Cable Youth Collective, this is Zoe and...
Gerard Lester. Thank you very much for having me here.
I'm here doing a Vox Pop with...
Billy.
I'm Tony.
Katrina.
I'm Jennifer.
First, I'd like to ask your ages.
I'm 18.
Some live on due to their good character development or excellent villains. Some just die out because they are just terrible characters. I'm going to explore a little deeper into why the better ones survive. Now, what makes a good story? Character development, interesting plot, good villain, or antagonist? After a bit of research and a bucket of Mountain Dew, I figured out what are currently the most popular superheroes. Now, I nailed it down to about two, Batman and Spider-Man. Now, why these two heroes? Well, I'm going to bring up Batman. Think about his villains, the Joker, Killer Croc. They're both excellent villains, very well thought out. The Joker's insane, I love him. Now, Spider-Man, very well-developed character, with really interesting morals and lessons. Now, what else helped these live on? Well, think of this. They both a cartoon series. Now, I'm not saying that's what made them popular. I'm saying this. It brings the heroes to a new generation of kids. What else? Well, remember when you were little, and you kind of grew up a bit, and you thought, hey, superheroes for little kids. You know what they did? They made movies. You know what these did? They showed the people who loved the series when they were little that, hey, these can be a little more grown up. I can still enjoy them when I'm older. I mean, I'm bringing up The Dark Knight. The cartoons from your early years helped show you they can love the character. And what the movie did? It made you see how gritty the character could actually be. How in-depth, how detailed, how evil the characters are. Insane. It was great. And on top of that, they brought out new animated movies, new series, to ensure the next generation is just grabbed up and just love the character as much as we do. I mean, that's multiple generations there. I know for a fact that's three. I mean, current kids, teenagers, adults, and probably their parents. Now, in conclusion...
You're taking too long!
Aquaman never been popular with children. Ah! Aquaman in pain! Aquapain!
I'm here doing a vox pop with...
Billy.
I'm Tony.
Katrina.
I'm Jennifer.
First, I'd like to ask your ages.
I'm 18.
I'm 16 years of age.
I'm 14.
And I'm 20.
What is your idea of a hero?
Awesome.
Well, a supervillain is much cooler than a hero, and it's someone who goes around destroying things.
I think a hero is someone who does something amazing that wouldn't normally be able to be done, like Wonder Woman or someone like... someone.
Yeah, I think there are those kind of heroes, you know, like the cartoon kind, Superman, Wonder Woman, whatever. But they're also like real life heroes, that people that you look up to that do amazing things.
So is your idea of a hero the same as a superhero?
I ditto.
Yeah, not necessarily.
Who is your favorite hero, person or fiction, or both?
Skeletor.
Cobra!
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
My favorite supervillain, probably the Joker. Villain fitting into the category of superhero.
Do you have a favorite person hero?
Maybe Gandhi. Me and Gandhi actually have the same birthday, but other than that, he's done really amazing things for peace and nonviolent action.
So if you could have a superpower, or just a power, what would it be?
I'd be a snail boy. I would, like, ooze up walls and stuff.
I personally would have the power of illusions. I want to make people think I'm doing something, but I'm really not.
I would like to be, like, a witch or something and be able to, like, make spells and make anything happen, so I'd have every single kind of power.
I think I'd probably like to have the power to see the future.
What is something that you do that you consider heroic in any way?
I breathe.
I save kittens from trees quite frequently.
I just pulled off the NoFest benefit concert, which was awesome and I think heroic.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Not really.
Just that supervillains are much better than superheroes.
Vampires rock.
Again, that was a piece by Zoe Luringer. Next is Katrina's short story about the Travelocity looming gnome and his humble beginnings.
Hi, I'm Katrina, and I have a story about a superhero named Bobberly the Gnome. Okay, once upon a time, there was a gnome couple. Their names were Hilda and Simon. They lived on 128 Oak Lane in Texas, within a very poor, simple neighborhood. During the month of June, Hilda gave birth to a young, teeny boy gnome. He was so small and that his head was the size of a human fingernail. He was so extremely ordinary and dull that she wept for him because he did not have a gnome beard. In fact, he didn't look like a mythical creature at all, but a plain midget. Since he wasn't extremely remarkable or important to their gnome tribe, and he would cost a lot of money to take care of, the whole tribe of gnomes, including the couple, decided to leave him on a doorstep in the middle of the night. They attached to him a note that said, "Bobberly the Gnome," and a small vial of gnome dust. Unfortunately, the doorstep was that of a man who hated children, and gave the gnome boy up to foster care. The gnome bounced from home to home over a number of years before settling in to live with a handsome young couple of scientists. They traveled with him all throughout the world, taking him to many strange and exotic destinations. But no matter how many times and places he went, he still felt a void in his heart for his old family and his first home. So at the age of 15, he set off in search of them. He went to New York and discovered the man who had first found him had become a famous writer. He told him of the long-lost rainy night in Texas when he'd gone outside hoping to see his publisher and instead found an ugly little midget with no hair or clothes on his doorstep. Now that Bobberly knew he had originated in Texas, he was determined to go see his long-lost gnome tribe, so he got online and tried to book the next flight to his homeland. But he failed, for there was a large virus taking over the whole internet, and he was unable to even log on to his Gmail account. No mail. So he gathered his pointy hat and ran to his scientist parents, who he knew could help. They researched and found that the only website that hadn't been blocked was the Republican National Party's homepage, which was run by John McCain. So Bobberly rushed to Washington, D.C., straight away to stop the villain once and for all. Since he was so small and plain, Bobberly was able to slip past the guards acting as a maid. He made it into McCain's office and assassinated him with his cone and a few grenades, making it so the internet was free as the wild buffalo again. To ensure that the blocking of travel sites was not to happen again, he created his own one-stop spot for vacationers, which he named Travelocity.com. He made sure it was virus-free by sprinkling his gnome dust on the website and protecting it with a wish. He used this website and all the money from it to buy hair growth cream so he could finally have a beard and look like a real gnome. He also booked a flight to Texas the next day and was off on a plane to see his parents for the first time in 16 years. When he got to Texas, he discovered his parents and a family in the same rundown, poor neighborhood as before. He gave them $1 million each so they could live in lavish mansions and ranches. Upon seeing Bobberly, his father started to cry, saying that he was deeply regretting getting rid of him and that he was very proud of his only offspring. Bobberly's mother hugged him as tightly as she could, almost crushing his ribs with her super gnome strength because she was so overjoyed he was there at last. All the gnome people complimented him on his beard and called him a hero. They threw him a large year-long party and everybody celebrated, even Bush.
That was a story about Katrina Crutch.
And next up, we have an interview by Tony with Nancy.
Hello, this is Tony Friu of the Cable Youth Collective, and I'm here to talk about the Northwest Services Peace Program. With me today is...
Nancy Roberts. I'm the Oregon-Washington Manager for Northwest Services Peace Program.
And I'm Marve Demirbilek. I'm an exchange student from Turkey, Istanbul, and now I'm living in Richfield, Washington.
Good to have you with me. Now I have a few questions, if you don't mind. All right. First off, why don't you tell us a bit about your program and what it does?
Well, Northwest Services is an exchange student agency, and what we do is find host families for exchange students that come through our agency, and we monitor them during their 5 or 10 months that they're here as high school students to make sure that they have a good experience with their host families, with the school, with the community, and that they themselves are enjoying their experience here.
And can you tell me if PEACE stands for anything?
Well, of course. It's an acronym for Promoting Educational and Cultural Exchange.
Ah. And when was this program founded?
In 1996.
What kind of people can be a part of this program? Can anyone host an international student?
Just about anyone can host an international student. They do need to have a bed of their own. They do not have to have a separate bedroom. They can share a room with another teenager. They have to have a bed of their own. They have to have 3 meals a day. You don't have to cook them all, but make sure there's food there. So if you can feed a teenager and have a spare bed and can pass a background check, you can host. We have single parents, retired parents, people with children, without children. Just about anybody can host if they can provide those things.
Right. And if someone's interested in hosting a student, when should they contact you?
Well, now is the time. If you're seriously considering a student, you can visit our website, which is www.nw-services.com. You can learn more about hosting there. Plus, you can see the students that are available right now that need families. And this is a really good time to pick a student because, for one thing, there's more to pick from this early in the year. And it gives you a few months to build a relationship with that student by phone and email before they actually get here.
Right. And what is involved in the hosting of a student?
Well, you need to be able to provide food for them, mm-hmm. and basically that is your only expense in hosting. Maybe a little gas to run them to sports events or whatever. But the student does bring their own money for all of their other expenses. They have an allowance between $200 and $300 a month. They can pay their own school fees, their own entry fees for, you know, if they're going to museums or out to eat. So basically the host parent is only expected to pay for the food that they eat at home. Students also have insurance, and they also do all speak fairly good English, even when they first get here.
Right. And what are the benefits? Is there anything for the parents? Or?
Well, of course, there are all of the emotional benefits. First, just knowing that you're helping a teenager from some other country realize a dream. These kids put a lot of time and effort into applying and qualifying to be exchange students, so you're helping a teenager achieve a really big milestone in their life. You also truly are helping promote peace around the world because you're building international relationships between countries. And what you really, really gain out of it is a son or daughter who just happens to live somewhere else in the world.
Mm-hmm. And how do they find out about it? Is there a website or a phone number you could give us?
Sure. The website again was www.nw-services.com. And our 800 number is 866. I had better read it off my list. 866-675-3977. And either one of those ways will put you in contact with someone from Northwest Services.
And is there programs for U.S. students to travel, or is it just foreign students traveling to the U.S.?
No, it is truly an exchange, and I'm actually the manager who's in charge of our study abroad program. It is a new program, and it's a little late right now to apply for school programs, but we do have summer programs, and one of the best ones is a four-week program to Turkey, so you might get
Yay.
To see Marve in Istanbul. There certainly is time if a student really wanted to apply right away, we could still send you to several different countries for 3 or 4 week programs in the summer.
Mm-hmm. And I have a few questions for the student. Merve, am I saying that right?
Well, people here mostly call me Merve, yes.
All right. How did you find out about the program?
Well, I've always wanted to become an exchange student, but I always thought, I'll go in college, I'll go later. But one day when I was walking in my school, I saw the flyers of this exchange student program, and I immediately consulted my teacher, and I was an exchange student a month later.
What kind of requirements did you have to meet if you want to be accepted into the program?
Well, for one thing, we had to pass this test and then an interview. You need to have a good amount of English to come to America, and you'll be active, and your social life has to be active enough, and yeah.
All right. What has been your biggest challenge to have the program in the program? Have you?
Oh well, for the first time in my life, I am away from my family, who has been my biggest support in all my life, and to be away from them and to come here all the way from Turkey and live in a place that I really don't know was a hard time for me, and of course the cultural change. And just living here without my family has been the hardest thing.
And your time in the U.S. is almost up. What's the most difficult thing you think you're going to face in the time left?
Oh, my God. I have less than a month left here. And I'm actually freaking out because I've been living here for 9.5 months now. And I built myself bonds. I've built relationships. I come to know my host brother and sister as my own. And it is going to be so hard to say goodbye to them, even though they did promise me to come and visit me in Turkey. It will be really hard to leave them and my friends, and for once, packing is going to be hard. I don't know how I'm going to fit 9 months worth of shopping into 2 small bags. So, yeah, I'm nervous.
I play a lot of Tetris beforehand. And of the things you've done, what do you think felt have been the most accomplished thing you've done? What have you been most proud of?
Well, I have been a member of my school speech and debate team, and this has helped me a lot because I am not a native English speaker, and me and another exchange student from Brazil, we did a duo, and we also did our oratory in speech and debate club, and we went to states for it, and that was an amazing experience for me. And to speak in English and to give speeches in English, that was definitely amazing for me. And I won my first trophy here. I won 2 ribbons, which I'm really proud of. And it's just been amazing.
And most importantly, how much have you enjoyed your time here?
Oh my God, a lot. For the first time in my life, I feel independent. And I feel like I have grown so much in this past year. And I feel like I'm going to go back to my country as an individual who can just stay on my own 2 feet, and it's just been a once-in-a-lifetime experience for me. I'll never forget it.
Good. And is there anything else either of you would like to add?
Well, of course, I would like to add that a student like Marvi and Camila, her classmate who went to a speech and debate finals with her, these students can only have this experience if someone does volunteer to host them. We need host families in this area. I have wonderful coordinators in this area and myself. So if you can consider hosting, please give us a call.
Right. And for one last time, can we get the website and phone number?
Sure. The website again was www.nw-services.com. And the phone number is 866-675-3977. We hope to hear from you.
Thank you very much for your time at KBOO.
And I'd just like to thank everyone who has supported me this year, my teachers, my host family, the Combs, my welcoming family, the Greens, and all my friends who have supported me a lot this year. I could not have done it without them. And of course, my coordinator, Nancy Roberts, who has helped me a lot this year. So I just want to thank all of them. Thank you.
I don't know, I'm kind of torn between two ideas. One idea I had would be like a crow raven-like dude, and like I'd be the kind of superhero that just sits on the tree all day and just makes fun of the other superheroes, mocking them with my crow voice and big wings and flying around the city. Whereas my other idea would be like gravity control. Now this one's really fascinating because I'm always like the idea of gravity as a force. So, like, somebody who can control gravity. So, at first, you know, you think he's, like, oh, he's some kind of telekinesis guy. But wait, then he, like, rends the dimensions and puts a black hole in front of you. You're like, what's going on? And he throws it at you because he's awesome.
I think if I were a superhero or a supervillain, I would like to be one of the, like, vigilante-esque superheroes. Not the Superman, Batman type, but more the, like, independent superhero who is maybe not liked by a lot of people, but still, like, does good for the community. I don't know that I would have, like, superpowers so much as, like, maybe just really cool gadgets and, like, ninja skills, but I would definitely want some super sweet spandexy outfit, probably involving something metallic.
I would totally be like a vampire or a witch because, you know, as long as I use my powers for good, I could fly if I was a witch on like the broomstick. That'd be awesome. And I could like make things happen with spells, and I would have like little animals that follow me around that could be my familiars, and like I could talk to them. And if I was a vampire, I would have like super strength and all that stuff, and I can always just eat pig's blood. So
if you were any kind of superhero, what would you be and what would you wear and what would you do?
Alright, if I was to be a supervillain, not a superhero, my name would obviously have to be Captain Hot Pants. And what would my costume be? A very flamboyant pink spandex suit, just because it'd be pretty hilarious. And then my power would be illusions. I can make you think you see things, but really they're not happening, just kind of throw you off. Then, while you're trying to fight them, I do my supervillain things, and I win the battle.
Multiple things. I would have different powers. I would definitely have my magical pink guitar that will play music that, you know, the right notes can make a certain something happen. I would definitely be able to have my animal friends from the forest come and help me out. And I think I would have the power, like, something with plants, I think. Like, to make flowers grow, like, really quickly or something, I think would be really cool just because, like, you never really get to see the real process of flowers growing. I think that would be cool. Like, the one thing that really gets me with a lot of female superheroes is they wear all these tight clothes and these really long heels, and that just doesn't seem really like it would be helpful in being a superhero. So I would have something cute on, but definitely not high heels or something because it doesn't seem like it would work out.
How long can you survive without food? What would you eat over and over again if you could only eat one food for a week? How does food give you energy? How would you prepare for a food emergency? Tune in to the Young Ladies Radio Project to find out more. How long can you survive without food? Jane Wolford, who is a teacher of anatomy at David Douglas High School, will tell us more about it.
Several nutrients are important, but I would probably choose calcium. It would be probably top of my list because calcium is used for muscle conduction, nerve conduction, specifically like your heart beating. In order for the heart to continue beating all the time, you need calcium because it helps to facilitate the conduction of the muscle. It also helps to regulate calcium levels in the blood.
What is the definition of metabolism, and why do some people have such high metabolism?
Metabolism is essentially all the processes that your body goes through to maintain homeostasis. Homeostasis is things like body temperature, energy levels, etc. And individuals that have higher metabolism versus low metabolism is basically genetic. I mean, you are, if you have a fast metabolism, you're lucky. If you have a slow metabolism, you know, it's kind of like a deck of cards. You get the hand that you're dealt.
Why does your body need energy, and how is it broken down in the body?
Your body needs energy because in order to process, or in order to move your muscles, you need energy. In order to do any kind of process like cell division, to maintain your body, you have to have something to provide the source that's going to allow the work to take place. Like an analogy would be your car. If you're driving a car, you're going to fill it up with fuel every few miles, because that's going to make the engine run. If you run out of energy, nothing gets done. Your bones aren't going to be repaired. Your skin isn't going to be replaced. Everything needs energy in order to complete a task. So you take in food, and ultimately it's broken down into a molecule called glucose, which is a 6-carbon molecule. And as that molecule is broken down, energy is released, just to make it simple. And so you eat food in order to create energy.
How do vitamins and minerals affect the body's growth?
Vitamins and minerals basically are kind of helper molecules. They combine with chemicals called enzymes, which are basically catalysts, which help to get processes going. And in order for the enzymes to work, you need vitamins and minerals in order to combine with them to get the process going. It's like they're helper molecules.
What does the body do when it lacks food, and what happens when the situation is prolonged?
Well, eventually you're going to start breaking down your body. Your body's going to find other sources for energy, starting with all the fat. All the fat will be metabolized or broken down in order to convert fat into energy. Once that's completed or depleted, then your muscle mass is going to be reduced because protein then will be broken down. And ultimately, all of your systems will shut down.
If you were in an emergency situation and you could only eat one thing for a week, what would it be?
If I had a choice of one thing, I would probably choose water. Because your body can go a long, long time without food, but the one thing you cannot live without is water. And because water, you are made up of 75% water.
What would you do in case of emergency? What food should you prepare, and what should you do? We have Keith Berkeley from Portland Office of Emergency Management to tell us more about this.
Those agencies have the things that they need and the methods of getting around, open roads, transport, assistance from police, public works, whoever has to help them.
Do you know any specific example when the food was needed?
In Portland, it has not been a large-scale issue yet in recent years. Anytime there's a larger-scale incident, if you look at the floods in Vernonia, or if you go back to the mid-90s, there were floods in Portland, those kinds of things. Even during the snowstorm, individual families ran into problems, but the community as a whole didn't.
Do you ask the agencies for help when the emergency occurs or before?
The answer actually is both. Help, and now you're under a lot of pressure. But we try to meet everybody ahead of time, as best we can.
Do you know how that nutritional standard impact on the food storage?
When you're talking about actually storing food, there's a couple different things that are going to be involved. First of all, is it perishable or non-perishable? Perishable means, will it go bad quickly? Or is it shelf stable? The next part of the question is, how are you storing it? Is it temperature controlled and humidity controlled? And then as far as nutritional standards goes, you're going to want to try and provide foods that are culturally appropriate if you have that luxury.
What advice would you give for public to prepare for emergencies?
The last part of your question was prepare. That's the biggest thing right there. It doesn't have to be hard. It doesn't have to cost a lot, but take the time to do it. Put some extra food aside. Buy a little extra every week or month until you build your food stores up. Don't make it something that you have to do by yourself. Ask your neighbors to help. It's not easy to do that, but if you make it part of your everyday life, it's a fair bit easier.
And the last question, if you were in an emergency situation and you have just one thing to eat, would you prefer?
I'm going
to
choose water because you need water to live. But if you're asking specifically food, probably peanut butter.
If you were to choose one type of food to eat for a whole week if there was an emergency, what would it be? Here are some random people sharing what they would choose.
I would eat bread for a week.
I would eat chiladas.
Eat spinach.
Eggs.
Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
I would eat brown rice.
Peanut butter and jelly and whole wheat.
Avocados.
I think probably nori seaweed.
Tacos.
This is like so practical. Pizza.
Rice and beans.
I guess I would say fish.
Avocados.
Avocados.
Eat rice cakes.
Chicken.
Fresh asparagus.
Probably baguettes.
I don't know, either soup, because can I eat different kinds of soups? Or is that cheating?
If it was an emergency, I could only eat one thing for like a zombie invasion or something, bread.
McDonald's.
Corn dogs.
I'm gonna go with bagels.
Oh my god, I don't know. Okay, instantly I thought fudgesicles or stovetop stuffing. But that would be impulsive because I wasn't thinking about like how I would survive for a week. So I guess stovetop stuffing would be more logical, however, fudgesicles would be far more enjoyable.
Bananas.
Sandwiches.
Watermelon.
Water.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Potato chips.
Paps.
Top ramen. Salad.
I think it would be beans.
I'd say nachos with lots of topping.
Sandwiches.
Cereal.
Rice.
Chocolate butter.
I would eat pad thai.
Meat.
Potatoes.
Have you ever seen or been a victim of natural disaster? How do these people survive? What kind of organizations help them and how do they function? We have Janine Wadsworth from Oregon Food Bank who will share some of this information with us.
Janine Wadsworth, I'm the Chief Operating Officer for the Oregon Food Bank.
What kind of foods do you keep for emergencies?
Well, we're an affiliate of Feeding America, and we store food that are MREs. I think they are meals ready to eat. We've stored up to over 59,000 meals at the behest of Feeding America. And we will also release some food items that are part of the USDA, but that is only after we receive approval and authority to do so from the Oregon Housing and Community Services Department in Salem. And that type of food is shelf-stable. So we really have available to us both types of foods.
What is general emergency plan and what is the longer term plan to rebuild?
We do have a very formal disaster preparedness plan, and we have that plan as part of our relationship with Feeding America, but also it just makes good sense to be ready. And then we're working on a longer term business continuity plan. So once the immediate disaster is over and things are settled down a little bit, then will we have some issues in terms of keeping our doors open and keeping our business continuity going.
If the rebuilding is delayed, how can starvation be prevented and what sorts of safeguards are in place?
One of the things that differentiates Oregon from any other state in the country is that we have a statewide food bank network. So if the worst case scenario were to occur and we didn't have our buildings available here in Portland Metro, we would look to our partners in the rest of the network to ensure that we get food to hungry people.
Have changing nutritional standards impacted storage content?
Well, actually, we've been very fortunate in this area, and a lot of it has been by design. Right now, our donated food is over 75% nutritional, and how we measure that in terms of the nutritional scales. And all of our food, which also includes USDA as well as donated, is now 83%. So we don't have to create a special pool of nutritional food for disaster preparedness because we strive towards having nutrition food available for folks who are clients of our programs on a day-to-day basis. So it's not just to feed people, it's to have nutritional food available to people.
What advice do you have for the public to prepare on a personal level?
First thing is have a plan. It's always good. Sit down and talk about it. Okay, what would we do if we couldn't get to our jobs or the phone was out? Or how would we approach what we needed to do in terms of preparing for disaster? So have a plan. Secondly, we always recommend keep recommended amounts of water available. It should be about 1 gallon per day per person. And then have at least a 3-day supply. After 3 days, hopefully, there would be help, and even Katrina. Even though that was elongated, a lot of folks were starting to get help after the 3 days. And have food available, again, for a 3-day supply, and usually food that doesn't require refrigeration or cooking.
If you were in an emergency situation and you could only eat one thing for a week, what would it be?
No, I think the thing that I would most recommend is probably canned vegetables, because canned vegetables will give you the nutrition you need. It'll give you some roughage, not as good as fresh vegetables, obviously, and it'll sustain you.
This has been the Young Ladies Radio Project, brought to you by Dina,
Irina,
Fadumo,
Uluv,
Luba,
and Victoria.
The Young Ladies Radio Project is a production of KBOO and the Immigrant Refugee Community Organization, IRCO,
that studies science, technology, engineering, and math.
As it affects us, our world, and the lives of the people around us.
Our music produced by AED.
The views of this program are strictly that of the individuals interviewed,
are not representatives of IRCO or as a organization.
That was an interview with the IRCO girls about food emergencies. Next up is an interview by Zoe with Katrina about Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
So, what is your name?
My name is Katrina.
Hello, Katrina. My name is Zoe. So, who is your hero?
Well, I would say my superhero is Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
So, what is Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Buffy the Vampire Slayer was originally a, like, comedy spoof movie about, like, a high school girl who's, like, a cheerleader, really preppy and stuff. And then one day she finds out she's, like, supposed to save all of humanity and slay demons and vampires, and that just really freaks her out, and it's the whole comedy. But Josh didn't, the creator of the show, decided to make it into a show instead of a movie because the movie totally backfired, and that's what Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the show, is. It's just redoing of the movie.
So what are the characters like?
the characters are really, they're really easy to relate to. Like, the writer, Josh Whedon, he just made the characters very complex, and Buffy's friends are Willow Rosenberg, who is played by Allison Hannigan, who's also in American Pie, Date Movie, and How I Met Your Mother. Her other friend is played by Nicholas Brendon, and I don't really know what else he's in. And of course, Buffy is played by Sarah Michelle Gellar, who was in Cruel Intentions. And I guess those are the characters.
So where was it made and set?
Well, Buffy is set in Sunnydale, California, the perfect, wholehearted suburban neighborhood. But of course, it has its secrets, as you'll soon learn if you were to watch it. And it's shot in California in many places, you know, and they have a lot of sets that were built for it, like Buffy's home and whatnot.
So what makes it different from other shows?
What I think really makes it different is the excellent writing. It's, people would consider it a dramedy because it's dramatic and the characters connect and are complex and stuff, and they have relationships and go through hardships that you can relate to. But it's also a comedy because there are a lot of punchlines and funny things that happen. It's also an action because, well, she kicks butt, you know. Also, one of the first openly gay characters on TV was Willow Rosenberg, who came out on Buffy. And there was a musical episode, which is a first for most shows. That was original.
So when was it on?
It was on, it started May 1997, and it ended March 2003. It was on for 7 years, and recently, after much prodding from fans, they brought it back for an 8th season in comic book form because the actors weren't available.
Why did you like it so much?
Just the writing. It was just amazing, the characters and the different things about it.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Just that Buffy's, like, an amazing role model, and I recommend this show to, like, many teenage girls and young youth.
Okay, thank you. With the KBS Collective, this is Zoe.
And Katrina. Signing off.
And now it's time for the upcoming events around Portland. Create characters and whole worlds of out of food. With Multnomah County Library, author and illustrator Saxton Friedman introduced food as the
newest arts of medium with pure appetizing children's books, including How Are You Peeling? And Food for Thought. Using Friedman's books for inspiration, we will cut and paste our own distinctive characters out of fun fruits, vegetables, and other edibles. Good for parents and children. This event is on Wednesday, June 24th from 10:15 to 11:45 a.m. at the Hollywood Library.
The Allstate Festival of Balloons is coming to Tigard June 19th to 21st at Cook Park, located at 17005 Southwest 92nd Avenue in Tigard, and features a festival of cars, barbecue competition, community stage, music, and a fantastic carnival, and much more. Balloons begin launching at 5:30 a.m. Friday, and the festival closes 5 p.m. on Sunday.
OMSI's OMSI Max Film Festival has already begun, but it continues through June 28th. The festival is a showcasing a number of IMAX films, including Everett's, Amazon, and Mystery of the Nile. For more information and a film schedule, visit omsi.edu.
The Junior Rose Parade is a week from today, Wednesday, June 3rd, in the Hollywood District of Portland at 1 p.m. The parade is a longstanding tradition of the Portland Rose Festival and, as always, is free. For more information, visit www.rosefestival.org.
And finally, the 2009 Portland Anarchist Book Fair is taking place next Saturday, June 6th and June 7th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Liberty Hall, located at 311 North Ivy Street in Portland. This event is brought to you by the Oxum Collective and features over 20 other collective tables, representing a wide range of radical, feminist, and revolutionary literature, art, and ideas.
All right, and that was the community event calendar. Another event that's coming up is the NoFest, and Jennifer and I are going to talk about that. So Jennifer, would you like to tell me about what the NoFest is?
The NoFest, it's an all-ages music festival in St. John's, Portland, and it's in 8 different venues. Mainly it's going to be in the St. John's Square, which if you're familiar with St. John's, it's kind of like a triangle-shaped square, so not really a square, but we're going to have a big stage there and a lot of acts. And then there are a lot of like smaller shops. There's like a cafe, a gelato shop, even a bookstore, and there are going to be other acts there. And it's the second year that we've had NoFest. Sean Ongley is actually the founder of the festival. It was kind of his brainchild. And he was thinking that it would be really great because St. John's is a part of Portland, but it's so far away, and like there are definitely distinctive things there, but there's nothing so distinctive that most Portlanders get out there very often. So he wanted to use music and art and just like community to bring people from Portland to St. John's and just have each other be exposed to the greatness of the neighborhood.
That sounds awesome. And do you know what bands, like some of the big highlights are this year?
Yeah, there are a lot of bands playing, actually. Some ones that you may have heard of more, although we're pretty much trying to get a lot of bands that don't get a lot of play, especially like on mainstream radio. But some of the ones that are more well-known, there's Spiro Sparrow, Lonesome Heart Radio, Evolutionary Jazz Band, Megachurch.
Megachurch are really awesome. I heard them play on Wedden and Kennedy's radio station recently. And I know there was like a short article about it too. But this is the second year, right, of NoFest?
Yeah. And like last year, I didn't actually go, but from what I've heard about it, things were kind of, a little disorderly, a little thrown together. So this year we've been planning it for months and everything is going down really smoothly. And it's a lot bigger, more exciting, more different kinds of music. So it should be really good.
And are you guys still looking for volunteers for it?
Yeah, we are. I'm actually the volunteer coordinator. I'm Jennifer. If you're interested in volunteering, we have opportunities on several different levels. Mostly what we need is people to assist the engineers with sound stuff, but we also need people to build the stage, and we definitely need people to get the word out so you can put up flyers and whatnot. I did that. It's pretty fun. So if you're interested in doing that, you should definitely get involved through KBOO. KBOO is kind of our co-sponsor.
Awesome. And also, it's going to be live broadcasted on KBOO, right?
Yeah, the whole day live broadcasted.
And it starts when and ends when?
It starts at 10 in the morning. That's like kids stuff, but it should be really cute. I'm working with Kelly to help put that on. And it goes, like, officially, it goes until 10, but then there's an after party, and we have a DJ, DJ Ashen. He's like spinning at Anna Bananas. So
nice.
Yeah.
They have really good coffee there too.
Yeah, they do.
So again, what day is that?
It's June 27th.
All right. And where can people get more information about it if they are interested?
If you're interested, you should definitely get in contact with KBOO. They can put you in contact with either me or Sean. We also have a website. It's www.nofest.net, and there's also a MySpace. So, you know, just go onto MySpace and like / NoFest, and cool. It's NoFest.
Awesome. Well, thanks for talking about it with us.
And yeah, definitely.
I'm going to hand it over to Billy now to outro the show.
Hi, you're listening to the KBOO Youth Collective Underground at 90.7 FM. And, well, we hope you had a good time, and please listen again. Thanks for listening to The Underground. The Underground is hosted every fourth Wednesday by the KBOO Youth Collective. We meet every Wednesday at KBOO at 6 p.m. to plan our show. If you're interested in getting involved, come on down or call our youth advocate, Aaron Yankee, at 503-231-8032-X221 or email at advocate@kboo.org. We also do a music show, Youth Randomonium, the last Friday of every month from 10 to midnight. We're always looking for music by anyone under 21 of any style. And check out our website at kbooyouth.org. Next up is Hard Knock Radio with David D. Thanks for listening.
I was never cool in school. I'm sure you don't remember me. And now it's been 10 years.